Hi there, my name is Alex Faust, and you're listening to Conversations at the Edge. Each week, we meet with a top business thought leader to learn what they think we should be prioritizing to build better businesses, positively impact our communities, and scale up. All right. Good morning, good afternoon, or good night, depending what part of the world you are joining us from. I am Alex Faust, your host of Conversations at the Edge, and I'm very, very excited to be hosting Bob Glaser today on the day of his book launch for one of his newest books called Elevate Your Team. If you're not familiar with Bob, he is the founder and chairman of the board of the Acceleration Partners, a premier global partner marketing agency that's won over 30 awards for its world-class company culture, which is made up of a remote workforce of over 350 people. And we're going to be talking a little bit today about how he's been able to accomplish that. And now, like I said, his brand new book called Elevate Your Team. And it really offers a clear alternative to the traditional leadership churn and burn playbook that has kind of contributed to what we're experiencing now, which is the burnout and the turnover. So Bob, welcome back to Conversations to the Edge. I'm very excited to, you know, host you on launch day. I'm curious if you could talk to us a little bit about capacity building, how to build a culture of capacity building, and what that kind of means in the context of your book and an organization rather than an individual.
Yeah. So, you know, and as you said, I think one of my epiphanies along the way was like, look, I want to grow and build a growth company, but I want to work with these people. Like, I have a slide I show like a race car going around the lap, and I don't want to change my tires every time I go around the lap. Like, how do I kind of stick with the people that got us there? So, if I think about, you know, the capacity, let me start with the individual kind of, because I think that helps in terms of how I define them. And spiritual was about understanding who you are, what you want most, and the standards you want to live by. Intellectual was how you improve your ability to think, learn, plan, execute with discipline, kind of your personal operating system. Physical capacity is health, well-being, physical performance, and emotional capacity is how you relate to challenging situations, emotional mindset, and I think the quality of your relationships. So take something like emotional capacity, right? And at the organizational level, what that looks like more is psychological safety. And how do you take kind of trust and vulnerability on a one-to-one basis? And how do you put that in the team? What are some of the practices that you can do to put that in the team? Have people walk into an environment where they feel that psychological safety from day one, where when things go wrong, they don't look at external variables. They look at what they can do better, where the team focuses on things they control, not things they don't control. And they're all things that leaders can do to emulate that. Similarly, working backwards from normally, but physical capacity, right? I mean, again, we're just not someone who's exhausted, tired, a mess, and then shows up to work and you know, is cheery and bright and ready to go. Now they don't, you know, showing up to work is logging on. So it's not like they change. But in the organizational context, it's how do we give people, particularly those that are working from home and in remote and hybrid environments, like how do we create some boundaries? How do we encourage them to prioritize their health and understand that if they're rested and all these things, they're going to show up to work better and more energized, and give them like some time away from work and some actual vacations. I mean, one of the examples I give in the book is there's a huge difference for a leader who says, hey, I'm going on vacation this week. I'm out of office, but with my family. But if you need to reach me, here are the 12 ways to reach me. You can fax me, text me, call me, you know, let me know if you need any help or otherwise. Like, all that does is emulate to the team that like you're expected to be on call when you're vacation. I don't have this graph right now, but I shared it last week of a guy who runs a venture firm who said, similarly, out of office, I'm going away with my family this week. We're spending quality time together. If it's an absolute emergency, you can text me at my wife's personal cell number, I think it was, or you can email interruptmyvacation@thecompanydomain.com. And so those two viewpoints just model very different behavior for the team. Similarly, something I've done for years, and I know a lot of leaders do, is like when it's not urgent and it's out of office time and they're just cleaning up some email at 11 o'clock on a flight home, you know, they do delay delivery and have the email send the next workday, and just so that no one feels like they're getting emails. Someone to me said last week that she was always checking emails at 11 o'clock, you know, looking for emails from her boss. And the answer was because there were always emails at 11 o'clock from her boss. Right. And so that's why her kind of sleep was ruined. And I look, this is not just, this is not like just, hey, the right thing to do. I think that eventually you're just going to burn these people out and they're going to be exhausted and they're not going to be excited about work. Like, I actually think that if you can create these boundaries, it truly is better for the individual's physical and mental health, you know, and it's better for their performance in the workplace, because you can either play the short game or you can play the long game.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious, when it comes to dedicating time, you know, as the leaders and managers of organizations, dedicating the time to capacity building inside the company, how much time are they actually dedicating to capacity building in their daily, weekly cadence versus, you know, executing on the company's objectives?
Yeah, it's, look, I think that that's fair. I mean, that's the balance that everyone's always trying to deal with. But if you just focus on today, I think an organization that focuses on today, 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 you know, it's not ready for tomorrow. So, and people are like, look, I, you know, they're getting offered jobs, they're offering opportunities. If they're not learning, you know, if they're not growing, if those things aren't happening inside the organization, someone, you know, just asked me to sort of be like a coach or a mentor to them. And I was sitting down with a breakfast and having them. And they were describing, like, they're just a voracious personal development person. But when they were telling me everything that they were doing about personal development, it was all outside of their job and their organization. I was like, you're not going to last in this job very long, right? Everything that you need and you're trying to get better, you're getting outside. Like, you didn't give me one instance where you're getting this inside the job. So that person is probably about to become a leader at a different organization. So yeah, look, it's about, look, we ought to make the donuts, right? there's the things that we need to do, but you got to have your 20% on R&D, or again, this is a very fluid workforce. This is a very global workforce. This is geography independent. Like, if you don't have a great reason for people to be at your organization beyond a paycheck, there's lots of ways to get a paycheck and be part of the gig economy and work as a consultant that they can do.
Thank you for that. So I'm curious now, you know, when you talk about in your book, when you're talking about capacity building and building an organization, there's the graph of how quickly the organization is growing. And then you have how quickly your people inside the organization are growing, and kind of helping balance that and making sure that your people can grow at the same rate so they don't need to be replaced or, you know, end up burning out. I'm kind of curious how you're identifying people's growth and capacity building versus where the company is at, and how do you kind of measure that balance between the two?
Yeah, there's a chart in the book that was sort of one of my epiphanies that led to the book, around kind of looking at this mathematically around what's the growth rate of the organization or team, and then where do people's personal growth rates fall? Equal to that line, below that line, at zero, you know, or way above that line, and with extremes being a clear underperformer. If imagine a team that, or organization that's growing at 30% a year, and someone has 0% of getting better. I think the flip side of that is a unicorn, someone who actually can get better than grow faster than the growth of the team. Unicorns are very infrequent. So I always say, like, make sure you keep them. And then there's people on the line. And then most of us, I think, fall into that opportunity zone of capacity building, where it's like, look, how do we improve people's ability to be the person who could be ready for that promotion, to be at the line, you know, to move forward? And they won't always be able to do it. And there's a key chapter at the end of the book. Like, look, we want to help everyone have the best shot at that, but there's also objective needs of the organizations that we can't look away. I've seen a lot of mistakes in finance. You know, let's say a team is growing, our company's growing 100% a year, and the top person in finance to start is a bookkeeper, and they're managed to improve into a controller. Well, they're not probably going to turn into a CFO in 2 years. Like, you just can't have enough career miracle grow to go from a bookkeeper to a CFO in 3 or 4 years. And you know, the right answer is probably that they're an ascendant controller and that you need a CFO, but they will inherently be unhappy about that. But if you make the decision that you don't want to hurt someone and you make them see a CFO and they are not a CFO, what can happen is they'll, like my friend's company, they'll make $1 million mistake with taxes because they just don't have the experience. I'm a big believer in aptitude, right? Aptitude's really important. I think it shows the ability to get better faster. But there are some things where you need, there's a certain level of experience that is required. And I think that matters more as the organization grows. For example, you know, we just hired a new CFO. We most of our team, you know, comes from within. The criteria that we needed for that CFO in terms of private equity M&A, global transfer experience, experience in an agency environment, like that, we're not going to just find that lying around on our team, right? So that was a case where we had to look outside.
That's great. And I think this transitions pretty well. There's a quote in your book where you say the key to doing this is training your employees not just to excel at the job that you've hired them to do today, but to help them grow to take on the roles of tomorrow. And I think this is really important. There is a limit to that, as you just mentioned. But I think this is super hard to map out for organizations, especially smaller companies. How do they figure out whether their people could become the leaders of tomorrow? They don't know necessarily what the skills are for tomorrow. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on helping some of the smaller businesses.
Yeah, this is some of the holistic better, right? Time management, people management skills, communication, like knowing how to set goals, knowing how to prioritize, like, you know, taking feedback, giving, these are actually all things that you need as a leader or somebody in the organization, but they're all things that help you outside the organization too. I think there are a lot of just general things that make people better that are part of the sort of capacity building that if you focus on those, again, that's the attempt to lift. And then I talk about both extremes in the book where you have someone who's not rising fast enough and have to make a hard decision. And someone's rising is really fast. And like, if you don't make room for them, they're going to go be a superstar at a different organization. Both of those are problems, but I'd rather have the person be in the vicinity than to say constantly, God, there's no one on our team that we can fill, you know, our future demand and roles with. So I think, again, when someone is a voracious learner, it is less about the specific skills of the job, and learners get better and improve. And for a lot of us who are going to be in leading and managing, 90% of that, we got to improve our leadership skills, right? That is our job, is managing, leading, and inspiring other people. It's less to do with the product. It's less to do with the service. A lot of that is going to be how do we show up as a leader? How do we model behaviors as a leader? How do we develop leaders on our team? And that those elements are pretty ubiquitous.
So when it comes to leadership and tying it back to, you know, the capacity building of the internal employees, is the role of the leader to try and help people move from, you know, those different trajectories that you talked about in terms of capacity building, moving them up to potentially becoming, you know, an A player, a unicorn? Or is it like accepting kind of where they're at on their own growth trajectory and then just feeding the ones that are going to last? What are your
thoughts?
That's
a good question. I mean, right. Look, you want to water all the plants. Some of the plants will grow faster than the other plants. And so I think it's sort of too, like, the goal of the leader, a leader should want to not keep their deep, they would want to see their people rise and ascend and like be a problem that they're ascending so much, right? That a true leader versus a manager would be happy. A true leader would want to grow their replacement and would feel huge pride in replacing themselves, you know, with that, because they're committed to that. So I'd say you want to water all the plants, but they will grow differently. And then you need to make objective decisions about what to do based on you have a 6-inch plant or a 2-foot plant, and you have a need for a 12-inch plant, right? And so I think that's where the first stage is to try to get all the plants to grow. But then I think good leaders both know when to make a tough decision, know when to then try to create opportunity for that person and push them forward. But yeah, those are kind of extremes that happen once you have that problem. But you want to create that problem in the first place, if possible, which is I have too many good people and I don't know what to do with them.
But I want to talk, you know, there's four areas of capacity building in your book, and we certainly do not have time to go in depth into all of them. But I want to touch a little bit on spiritual capacity.
Yeah.
We're not necessarily talking about religion, but more of knowing oneself. And I'm curious, you know, why did this make it in? Why is the spiritual capacity so important in your opinion?
Yeah. So So a couple of things. If you follow Jim Collins' sort of level five leadership, you know, where you move from a competent doer to a level five leader is this ascendant leader who makes everyone else better, and is sort of the pinnacle of leadership. It's almost impossible to do that if you're not doing that from an authentic base of who you are at your core. And I think a lot of people haven't done the work to understand how their values, their strengths, their weaknesses affect them as a leader, show up for them. There are certain patterns. And so I think that helping people understand this and become the best version of themselves as a leader is this sort of key to leadership development. I was speaking at a company a few weeks ago and they gave me their kind of standards for leaders. And they said, can you talk about this in the speech? And I said, sure. And I said, look, here are the standards for leaders. This is how your organization expect leaders to behave. They are not telling you what type of leader to be. Like, these are sort of like shared best practices. Like, a lot of us pull a bunch of best practices from other people and we use them. And then eventually we try them on and we're like, these aren't really me. You know, I appreciate that Alex did this. Or a lot of time we're doing something that was a best practice of a leader we admired or is the opposite of a leader we didn't like, right? That's a common thing. And it's not really us. And having done this work and having helped people figure out their core values and be able to articulate that, I just seen some really powerful patterns and transformations where people are like, oh, this is who I am. So an example, you know, there's some times when a strong core value comes out tied to some of even the why work that we've done with people on relationships based on trust. And people who have a core value of relationships based on trust, 9 times out of 10, they had a violation of trust in their life that has stayed with them. And so these are people that keep small circles and it's hard to get in it. And once you're out of it, you are out of it. And what we saw with these leaders, we asked questions was, and we looked at their team and how they were leading. If you were 5 minutes late to a meeting, if you missed a deadline, if you were kind of like can be found at 4 o'clock on the afternoon, like those signaled things to that leader that you are someone that cannot be trusted and you were in a penalty box and you didn't even know it and you get out. And so once the leader did this work and they were like, this is a value, they valued me. They go back to their teams like, look, I'm someone who really values trust. So here are the things, and I will trust you until I don't trust you. And here are the things that build trust with me. Being on time, doing what you said you want to do, you know, being available when you say you're available requires over communication. And like, you're going to want me to have your back and just watching like the difference when they're able to, it's kind of like, here's the, you know, shameless grab of my book, but here, I'm going to give you here's the playbook to me as your leader. Here's what I really value and not. And similar for me, like I would say to people like, look, here's why you would love working for me. And here's why you would hate working for me. And they're kind of one and the same, right? As a 40-year-old manager leader, like I'm always evolving, but I'm not going to change now. And I'm not going to change things that are set deep within me since I was a kid. So it'd be better to say to people, this is who I am. This is what I value. I don't care if you're 5 minutes late to the meeting. If you come up with you walk in and you have a better solution, right? It's more kryptonite for me to walk into the meeting and say, we just can't make this better. It just can't be improved. It just can't, you know, there's no way to do that. That sort of violates my primary core value of trying to make things better. So this is why I do think that, you know, understanding their strengths, understanding who you are, then in emotional capacity, communicating that, being an organization where I understand a lot about Alex and I understand where Alex and I kind of naturally combat. You know, that's, I think that helps solve a lot of interpersonal communication issues, which are about 90% of the issues in most companies I have seen.
So what do you do when maybe there's not necessarily a match for those values with an employee on your team, but they might still be really good at their job? And, you know, yeah,
it's a good question. So in a perfect world, if a company has real values, implicit or explicit, people are drawn to the company because they have shared values. So people should have similar things that they value. There are the cases where someone is really realized that they have not align values with the organization, those kind of are dead on arrival. I don't see those really working out. I think you can drag it out or otherwise. You don't have to have perfect alignment, you know, match up with your boss. But if you have two to three things where we have really conflicting values, like that may be a struggle overall. You may have similar organizational values, but you just, so there's either being aware of that and knowing how to mediate that, or maybe that person maybe should be on a different team. Again, there are teams in our organization that are focused on our largest, most complicated clients that want something different every day, and it's chaos. And then there's teams that are focused on our predictable, repeatable clients where it's a, you know, we develop a playbook and we execute it. They kind of attract different people, you know, who some like one and some don't like the other. And I think that's fine. We're all trying to find the right fit. I think about universities, like we've won all these awards and stuff. I do not think we're a great place to work for 98% of the people. I think we figured out the 2% of people who align to our values, the type of work we do, how we work, where we work, that we're an agency. Like that's a very specific set of variables. Having gone through the college process with one kid and now another, I can say like, there's a lot of great universities in the US. Some are large sports-oriented city schools, you know, and some are very sparse, you know, suburban, you know, liberal arts campus with a totally different set of activities. And it's just a different value prop. And usually the person who likes one doesn't like the other. Both of those people would say they're great schools, but if I took one out of one, they'd say, I don't like this school. So I think we shouldn't pretend that everything is for everyone.
Thanks for listening to Conversations at the Edge. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please share it with a friend or a teammate who you think would benefit from what we covered. In addition, you can find us on LinkedIn to get all of the updates, or if you'd like to hear the full conversation, just visit growthinstitute.com/the edge to learn how you can become a member as well. Thanks again, and see you next time.